The following is a Barrett Sports Media production. We do the digging, so you don't have to.
We've got breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Bringing you the biggest stories from the industry you care about. This is the Media Noise Podcast.
Well, let's hear it.
Now, here's your host, Dimitri Ravanos.
The dulcet tones of Steve Kamer bringing us in to episode two here of the Media Noise Podcast. How you doing? I am Dimitri Ravanos. One of the things I learned about Steve, remember last week I told you he's the voice of Judge Judy and Steve Harvey and all these different things. I just learned he is the voice of the new trailers for The Mandalorian. Now, I don't want to get too deep into this because I could go on for 15 minutes, but as a Star Wars fanatic, as someone that literally had an argument with my wife of could our son's middle name be Han, that just brings delight to my heart. I assume I will be introduced to Baby Yoda in no time flat. On today's show, we are going to talk to Jacob Conley about Skip Bayless's ongoing feud with LeBron James and what it means for FS1. We are also going to talk about the way even the top line media four teams have had their jobs affected during COVID-19. Tyler McComas wrote a great piece this week for the site, talking to not only sideline reporters, but also play-by-play guys about how their job has been affected by not having the same sort of access they have in years past. First, though, we've got to get into a story that we picked up from CNBC. Bob Chapek, the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, was on CNBC this week to talk about the company transitioning its business model. In a pandemic, the way forward for Disney is not going to be what it has been in the past, a business built on big feature films and the theme parks as their number one sources of income. Obviously, with travel down, the theme parks are reeling, and movie theaters are not nearly close enough, to full operation to generate real income in the feature film business. So, Bob Chapek says they are moving to a digital-first model.
Well, what we want to do, Julia, is accelerate our transition to a real direct-to-consumer priority company. We believe that we've got the opportunity to build upon the success of Disney Plus, which by almost any measure has been far and above anybody's expectations, and really use this to catalyze our growth and increase shareholder wealth.
So the question we have asked about this is, what does this mean for ESPN? If the company is going to prioritize Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu, what does that mean for the traditional cable network that so many of us fell in love with as we were growing up and learning about and wanting to learn more about sports? ESPN is certainly equipped to go digital, right? Like, I'm a college football fanatic. If you are, like, college sports is a great example of this, because whether you like football, basketball, baseball, whatever, if you go to ESPN Plus, if you go to, I can't remember if it's Watch ESPN or ESPN3 now, however it's branded, if you go to any of their digital platforms, there are streams for dozens of games happening at the same time on a Saturday or a Tuesday night during basketball season, whatever the case may be. Certainly they have the bandwidth to make that transition possible, and rights deals are not a problem, right? ESPN is already in business with the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball. They are in business with all of the major college athletic conferences. They are in business with the smaller college athletic conferences as well. In terms of live games, the content is there, and it's going to stay there. Like, just look at ESPN's history with negotiating for Monday Night Football. Look at their history of what they paid for the NBA. Look at what they just paid for the SEC, and they've got a new Major League Baseball contract to negotiate. The rumor is they want in on the NHL rights. ESPN, by all indications, will spend to keep the top-line play-by-play properties on their network, and space is certainly not a problem. So the idea that this is going to bankrupt or lead to the downfall of ESPN is absolutely absurd. It would probably be the end of some of what we have come to know and expect from ESPN, though, right? Like, think about this. In a world where ESPN becomes exclusively a digital product, a product that is made to fit in the palm of your hands, consume on, be it your phone or tablet screen primarily. Obviously, there will still be people consuming and streaming to television. How does SportsCenter really exist in its current form in a world like that? Hour and a half long content is not really something that digital streaming networks are made for, particularly ones that are made to consume content on the go. So I would imagine SportsCenter would become something more along the lines of what ESPN created for the very short-lived Quibi, or SportsCenter on Snapchat might be a better example of what the future would hold for that show should ESPN decide to go the full digital route. I think the other thing that would really be affected here are those studio shows. And ESPN already does a great job of this and acknowledges where a big chunk of that audience is. Shows like PTI, Highly Questionable, Around the Horn, like all of those shows are podcasted already. I would imagine if ESPN goes to a fully digital network, certainly some of those shows might exist in video form. Like Katie Nolan has a show that exists in video form on ESPN Plus. They are not averse to doing that. But I would imagine you would see some of the lower watch shows, the shows that do not consistently generate the numbers they are expecting, to go to podcast only. And I don't think that would be such a bad thing. I think that you saw with a show like High Noon, which didn't generate great TV numbers, they had a pretty loyal podcast audience. I would imagine that would be the same for a talent like, I'll use Dan Le Batard as an example, whose audience tends to be younger than the ESPN audience and is pretty dedicated to the podcasting space. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that ESPN does make this shift in the future, but until you can sell all the play-by-play partners on we are exclusively a digital brand now, ESPN is not leaving its traditional cable home anytime soon. So it wouldn't be a LeBron accomplishment if somebody like Skip Bayless did not come along to rain on the parade. Jacob Connelly wrote for us about Shannon Sharpe basically having enough of Skip's LeBron, anti-LeBron bias, and bringing a GOAT named LeBron onto the set of Undisputed to sort of throw it in Skip's face. This was a really fun segment. And I do wonder if there was any sort of jibing at all going on there, Jacob, or if your opinion was they just wanted a reason to bring a GOAT onto the set.
They were definitely going back and forth. In fact, Skip brought in a cubic zirconia ring for Shannon, so they had gifts for each other, but the GOAT definitely took the cake.
You know, what's really interesting is Shannon has never been afraid on that show to push back on Skip. And obviously, that's the model it's built on. But there are times when we see Shannon Sharpe get visibly annoyed by whether it is Skip Bayless, whether it is another take they are talking about. Shannon Sharpe looks like a guy, or comes off like a guy, I should say, that takes criticism of players, no matter what sport, very personally.
I'm sure he does, because he was an outstanding athlete. And when you attack one athlete's greatness, you're in a way attacking him too. So that makes sense.
So for a long time, Skip Bayless has been on this LeBron will never be Jordan, LeBron is overrated, LeBron is not that good kind of train. As somebody that consumes sports media all the time, do you feel like we are at a point where there is any sort of turning back or moving off of this, or is this Skip Bayless's brand now?
This is Skip Bayless's, this is his thing, and I don't think he's going to change what he's doing, because it's obviously working well with the viewers. It's gaining people's attention, so why would he change now? Even if LeBron gets a couple more rings, I don't think he'll switch.
Do you think it's gaining attention with the viewers, or do you think this is one of those things where either you are in on whatever you want to call it, the joke, the bit, whatever, or you've dismissed Skip Bayless as somebody that you just don't take seriously? I feel like this bit's been going on for so long, there's nowhere left for it to go.
And I'm wondering if this is actually Skip Bayless's opinion now, or if it's just a caricature he's built of himself, and now he's got it so built up that he can't back away from it too easily. So
right, there's a point question where this is all you do.
Yeah.
One of the columns on the site this week that is drawing a lot of attention is Tyler McComas's chat with various reporters and play-by-play guys in both college football and the NFL of how they are doing their jobs without the access they are used to having. Tyler is with me right now. Tyler, it seems to be the theme is it's really hard. This, like, 2020 would be the worst year to be your first year on a particular beat.
Yeah, because you don't get to establish any relationships with the people that you're covering. And I thought James Rapine in this article put it perfectly. I mean, it's a chance for not only the athletes to humanize themselves when you get in those one-on-one kind of intimate conversations, but it gives the chance for the media to humanize themselves as well. You know, and you're just missing out on that opportunity with new coaches that are there, players that are there, because like it, love it, hate it, players and coaches have a certain stigma about the media, and right. when you're conducting or asking tough questions via Zoom and not face-to-face, the feel is just totally different. And a lot of times it can come off the wrong way, and it's an easy way to get off on the wrong foot with somebody that you're going to cover for the next several years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you talked to two play-by-play guys in this column, and both of them, one of the things that they said, like, in common was that they really lean on the past relationship with coaches, whether that means that they communicate privately with one another, whether that means you lean on old stories. It does seem like relationships are everything to broadcasters this year.
Yeah, they are. And the tough thing, too, is still a lot of those coaches, they don't trust anybody. And that's including the play-by-play guy. So in theory, you think, oh, I'm the play-by-play guy. I can just text the head coach. I can just call the head coach for any personnel changes this week. That's not the case, man. I mean, you have to, and maybe play-by-play guys in the past didn't really have to develop sources as much as the local radio host, as much as the local journalist, whoever. But now I think that there are some of these play-by-play guys that are having to develop more sources within the program, within the team, to get the information that they need on Saturdays and Sundays. And yeah, when I conducted this interview, one comment that was really interesting to me was from Paul Allen, who's the voice of the Minnesota Vikings. He said, like, just not being able to be around the team, having to call the game from, you know, basically the Jumbotron inside Minneapolis, he got a lot of players mixed up the first week.
Oh, interesting.
You know? So and maybe that's not fixable. Maybe that's more of a I'm calling the game from a screen thing.
Yeah.
More than it is I'm not face to face with the players, but I think that they each have their factors into not maybe even being as sharp as a broadcaster as you normally are.
I'll wrap on this because you brought this up. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, and you just mentioned this, is that coaches are way more guarded than ever before, even with the official team media. I mean, that is like state-run media. Like, how many times have you or me or anybody listening had a play-by-play or a sideline reporter from the team broadcast on the show, and they say nothing because they don't want to put anything out there the team doesn't want out there? It is really interesting that in 2020, coaches are so guarded, they don't even talk to those guys.
I got an instance of this, actually. So Oklahoma played Missouri State first game of the year. It was a pay-per-view broadcast. And the guy that was doing the pay-per-view broadcast, the play-by-play, actually works for Sooner Sports Properties. He works for the university.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley is so guarded, the guy doing the game didn't notice the starting kicker was out with COVID until the fourth time the backup kicker went in the game to kick an extra point, right? So
wow.
I think a little bit, or a lot of that, excuse me, is on the play-by-play guy for not recognizing who's on the field. But
yeah.
He was put in that spot because there are coaches out there like Lincoln Riley that are so guarded that they won't even give you an updated roster heading into a game where they're favored by 50 points. So I think that, you know, play-by-play guys that have been around for a long, long time, the Paul Allens, the Brad Shams, the Mitch Holtzes, guys like that, they get used to doing things a certain way. They get used to their routine throughout the weeks, and I'm sure that their routine has been basically turned upside down with all the extra work that they have to do.
All right, I want to thank Jacob Conley and Tyler McComas for being on with me this week. As always, All of the columns and articles we are talking about today can be found at BarrettSportsMedia.com. Before we put a bow on today's episode, I do want to let you know we are certainly keeping an eye on what is happening in Philadelphia. Mike Missinelli, if you have not seen this, has taken all references to 97.5 The Fanatic off his Twitter account. John Kincaid, originally from Philadelphia, spent the last 20 years hosting down in Atlanta, put up a very interesting post acknowledging that he is in Philadelphia right now. So we will certainly see what happens going on there. Another story I'm very interested in following is the story that is told around Major League Baseball's postseason numbers. Because like everything else, they are down right now. The regular season saw a slight uptick in some markets, and I believe that is because there was just less baseball this year, so fans were a little bit more urgent about their watching. But the playoffs are down 26%. Like, do we talk about that the way we talk about that the NBA must be panicking? I don't think we do, but I also am interested to see what the story is if your World Series is Atlanta and Tampa Bay. All right, I will talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to the Media Noise Podcast. Reach out to me directly. I'm always happy to chat. DimitriTheGreek@gmail.com or at Dimitri Rivanis on Twitter. Talk to you next week, everybody.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Thanks for listening to the Media Noise Podcast with Dimitri Rivanis. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. And check back soon for new episodes. To stay up to date on the latest sports media happenings, visit BarrettSportsMedia.com.